The words I speak and the words we hear be your words of life to us, our God. Amen. For those of you who are wondering, it is still Easter, which is why we still light the candle all the way up to Pentecost. It's more than a day, it's more than a week. It's 50 days. 50 days is the season of Easter. All the way to Pentecost. 50 days to tell the stories of the resurrection. And that's lucky because they're all different. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. The women play a pretty important role in all of them. But apart from that, the appearances to the men are either not recorded, Mark, happen in Jerusalem, Luke and John, or happen in Galilee, Matthew and John. So they don't even agree on where it happens. Kind of Luke is the Anglican and has it, John is the Anglican and he has it in both Jerusalem and Galilee. The Gospel writers do not record all of these things to convince us of the truth of the resurrection. They do it to invite us to reflect on our own experience of the crucified and risen Christ. Particularly the hearers of their Gospels who lived in hard times, times of persecution, where they'd been cast out from the synagogues when the temple had been destroyed. Times where they lived in grief and despondency. In the midst of that, they were invited to reflect on their experiences of the crucified and risen Christ. And these stories that we've been listening to over the last few weeks present the disciples who are filled with fear and trembling, run away, stay silent, doubt, disbelieve, hide, give up, leave town, go home, go fishing, disbelieve even in their joy and wonder, wondering and questioning in the midst of their happiness, need proof, are confused, not even recognizing Jesus when he is among them, their hearts are set on fire. Pretty big range of emotions, really. And I'm sure we can find ourselves somewhere in that range. It's all there. So the question then for us is, where are we in all of this, in our Easter this year? For the last 2 weeks, we've been listening to Luke. No, we haven't been listening to John. The section's called Luke, it's very confusing. John's version of the resurrection, which starts with Mary at the tomb, and then the disciples, and then Thomas. And if we carried on, he then moves that to Galilee, because after they had all experienced the resurrection, Peter and his mates said, well, I don't know what to do with that. And they go home and they go back to their lives as before. So we think resurrection is this amazing thing that changed their lives. It does, eventually. But actually, Peter went home, became a fisherman again. This week, we hear Luke's version, which is also in Jerusalem. And it begins with the two who had given up. The two who went home to Emmaus, and I like this icon because it shows them as a husband and wife. Most of the pictures and most of the icons show them as two men, but actually a lot of commentators would suggest that they were husband and wife. But somehow the woman got kind of lost and became a man. So I like this picture. It's a good one. And, well, they've given up, haven't they? They've heard some of the stories, but they don't believe it. All their hopes have died on that cross, and so they have gone home to their old lives, home to Emmaus. Our pilgrimage ended in Emmaus, where they think Emmaus was. I'm not entirely sure. And there, they encountered the crucified and risen Christ on the road, who asked them what they were talking about and what was happening. And they were in disbelief. Have you heard? Like, how could you be coming from Jerusalem and not know what was happening? That's ridiculous. And then he explains the scriptures to them. Now, we do need to note that if you troll through the Old Testament, through the law and the prophets and the wisdom literature, the Psalms, you will find it very difficult to find very many references that say that the Messiah will have to suffer and die and will be raised on the third day. It would be a very small selection of verses. So what Jesus is doing there is actually helping them understand the bigger picture of what the scriptures said, so that they can understand what he was on about. But they still don't recognize him. It's only when they stop and invite him in for meal and to stay the night, and he picks up the bread, not the host, and breaks it and shares it with them, that they recognize who he is in the breaking of the bread. And they said to each other, "Weren't our hearts on fire when he spoke to us along the road and when he explained the scriptures to us?" And so they go back and they are busy telling the other disciples about their experience of the risen Christ when Jesus appears in their midst. That's today's story. That's how it begins. They were talking about these things when Jesus appeared. They went back to tell the other disciples what the writer for 1 John says, that they were all made in love, that they were all held in love, and that they were all restored in love. And as they are saying that, the risen and crucified Jesus is suddenly in their midst, offering peace and offering the affirmation of that, offering the affirmation that they are made in love, held in love, and restored in love. And he commissions them to be witnesses to this in the world. The resurrection is God's affirmation of the way of love lived in Jesus' life and crucifixion. The small band will be the one who continue to live, to witness, to live out the way of love lived in Jesus' life and resurrection. Life and crucifixion, bringing God's peace and justice. So as we read these accounts, we too are invited to know that we are made in love and held in love and restored in love. And we are invited to join those through whom the way of love is lived, that was lived in Jesus' life and crucifixion, continues to be lived out. We join that small band, bringing God's peace and justice in the world. So the question that every Easter asks of us is, how do we respond to that, both as individuals and as the Anglican parish of Gate Park? Well, how we answer that is changed a little bit by the fact that I finish in 6 weeks. And one of the things that I've had to learn to do is to change the "our" and "we" to "you," because it will not include me after the 26th of May. And that's quite a hard thing to do, to be honest. My going is causing already a lot of uncertainty for you and for me. I have no idea what's happening after the 26th of May. People say, "What are you going to do?" And I go, "Well, there's a long list of television programs that I have not kept up on." The vestry has met with Archdeacon Nigel, and so I will leave Faye and Clark to talk about what that's going to look like, but I can say that it's clear there will be no priest in charge. There is no one available here or anywhere else in the diocese. And so how that will work out, I think the details of that are still being worked out, but it's not going to be easy. So the response of this parish to the invitation of Easter will be even more important, because the life of this parish will depend on each one of you. One of the things that I'm aware of as I say that is that it has been quite a while since we've talked about stewardship in the parish. We should have probably done it 2 or 3 years ago, but COVID got in the way. And we definitely should have done it last year. It wasn't quite stated that we were going to do it, but it was and some of the things that were on our list of things to do, well, that was really stewardship. But to be honest, last year I was far too tired, and vestry was tired. It was enough to keep going, really, without thinking about what else we needed to do. But it is important every now and again to take some time to reflect on the importance of stewardship, to reflect on the importance of how our life in God begins with God's gift of life to us, and in creation and through Christ, and that we are invited to respond to that gift. So when we talk about stewardship, it is simply a time to reflect on deliberately how we respond to the gift that God has given us, the gift of life, the gift of our talents, the gift of our time, the gift of our resources. And so there are two aspects to this, although this tree has three. So one is our time and talents, and one is our financial resources. So what happens next in the parish will entirely rely on you all. That's how the life of this parish, looking after yourselves, and the ongoing mission of this parish. Because if all you're focused on is keeping the parish going without thinking about what your mission is, there's not a lot of point to that. You simply become a club. And the church is not a club. Churches have become clubs. But the church exists to be part of the mission of God. That is the only reason the church exists. So I will invite you all over the next 6 weeks to reflect on your place in this community and how you contribute to the ongoing life of this community and its mission. And what is God's invitation or call to you at this time? The second part of any stewardship campaign is money. You will recall at the AGM that there is a lot of uncertainty about our ability to actually afford a new vicar. Last year we ran up a significant deficit, and we can blame most of that on painting roofs and doing other maintenance. But this year we have continued running at a deficit. And part of that is because the assessments from the diocese have gone up by 33% over the last 2 years. The insurance has doubled over the last, well, this year. Our wage and stipend bills continue to go up every year because there's a little group in Wellington, which I'm not going to argue against it. They look at what consumer price index and all those kind of things, and then they say what the stipend should go up, and that then is passed on to all the lay people who are also working for this parish. So they go up pretty much every year in January. And over that time, our income has pretty much stayed the same. So our ability to pay the bills, which a few years ago we were running at a surplus, is now we're running at a deficit. It's not sustainable. And in fact, Paula and Terry's budget that they presented at the AGM had a decrease in income. So we need to think about the financial support you offer to this parish. And I know that's tough because we're all, like, my income is about to drop significantly. Yes, I do get a clergy pension, but it's nowhere near. It's probably a third of what I get on a stipend. So, but we do every now and again need to stop and reflect and think about the financial support we offer the life of this church, so that this church can continue to exist and offer ministry both to ourselves and to the wider community. And so, over the next weeks, I would invite you to prayerfully reflect on that as well. I've given you our brochure. Hopefully you all have one of those. So it kind of talks about some of the aspects that I've talked about this morning. And one of the things it does talk about is bequests, and they have been enormously helpful in the past to do particular things when we've received them. So we, for example, helped pay for these chairs using bequests and money that you gave as well. So I offer that as my kind of parting gift. I felt very guilty We hadn't done any stewardship stuff, so I thought, right, we'll just do it. And it's probably the shortest stewardship campaign in your lives. And it may be that Vestry needs to come back and do some more of this later in the year, particularly once we're clear about what the finances are looking like, what we can afford, but also how the parish is tracking in terms of people being involved. So instead of having conversations, I invite you to just sit for a moment and to reflect on those things that I've said, and in a moment we'll be led in prayer.